Wednesday night rugby on Off the Ball.
Yeah, so we'll keep an eye on that. Bayern are 1-0 up against Arsenal. It's 20 minutes gone. If there's any changes in that, we'll let you know. You'll probably hear a groan from Jerry if there is any action in that. We'll hear from Keith in just a minute as well. Jerry, how are you doing?
Yeah, great, thanks.
Enjoying a down week?
Yeah, it was until a quarter of an hour ago.
We'll talk Six Nations. We'll talk John O'Gibbs a little bit later on. We'll talk a bunch of other stuff. Dwayne Peel added to the Ulster coaching ticket as well. On Monday, Eddie O'Sullivan was pretty certain there's not that much for the Irish management to learn from the game against Italy. It's get things back on track, move on, no injuries that we know of, and that actually I guess we won't ever
apart
hear
from Rob
until,
Carney.
Yeah. That, and that's it, really. You don't try to read too much into it. You don't try to, you know, or can you? Are they sifting through that tape going here, and here? Or how does that work?
No, I wouldn't imagine there's a huge amount they can learn other than the value of starting off with that kind of intensity they showed from the start. And I think they would have learned the lessons of the Scotland game for the rest of the tournament.
Yeah.
So it's a reminder what they're about. I think it will be a kind of a benchmark for the remainder of the tournament in terms of playing with that kind of high intensity, that tempo, that kind of recycling, wearing teams down. And then when you wear them down, gaps will appear. And, you know, phenomenal work rate of the back row in particular. And good work rate from the bench as well when they came in. And the team should, in theory, be strengthened even more by the time France come calling. And I think it would be a blueprint as well for trying to beat the French, because if they maintain anything like that kind of high tempo against France as well, I think we've seen enough at club level and certainly in the meetings with France over the years that if it's any kind of a dry day and any kind of a high tempo, their fitness levels will come shining through.
Yeah. Is there a feeling that France's fitness is actually improving a little bit under Guinoves, that they were able to see out the game against Scotland? Or
I think that said more about their desire and their willingness now to play for the shirt in a way that was never the case really under Philippe Saint-André. They clearly believe in Guinoves and in the French jersey and want to achieve in a way that they didn't over the previous World Cup cycle when Ireland were unbeaten against them. They have got the usual litany of big ball carriers and a few heavyweights to bring off the bench as well. But I don't think it was really their fitness levels got them through so much as their desire. And in fairness, their willingness to go to the corner at 16-all and keep chasing the game. I thought they were worthy enough winners. And I think they're a more dangerous team under Noves than they ever were under Philippe Saint-André. But I still think they're beatable.
Okay, Karim Benzema has equalised for Real Madrid. It's 1-all, 20 minutes gone in that game. Still 1-0 to Bayern against Arsenal. Keith Wood, good evening to you.
Good evening. How are you?
Jude, we're just saying there that there isn't a whole heap from an Irish management perspective to be learned from the Italy game. Or is there?
Everything that we said last week was wrong, and they're world beaters this week. That's probably it. Onward straight away, immediately for the championship. You can't take a whole lot from it. I think you can say that they got their attitude right, and Ireland are a potent enough team when they are, and they were just well off the mark the previous week. But they played from the very first second, very aggressive. Played at the sort of standard that we're used to, and it was fun to watch, but not that much fun when you put it in the light of the other two games that were on over the weekend, which were just phenomenal, and of a standard and intensity that that we didn't obviously get in Rome. I mean, we did everything we could do, and that's about all you can say about it, really.
The other two games. Are they a suggestion that mid-World Cup cycle is actually when we're going to start seeing the peak of the Six Nations, that we need to get used to this, that this is it, we're far enough away from the last World Cup, the teams have recovered from the injury and the intensity and the end of the coaching cycle, to this point here where they're starting to try new things and be aggressive, and it just feels like, because this time last year everybody's complaining about the quality of the Six Nations. Now this time in the middle of the tournament, everyone's going, wow, this is a great tournament again.
But this is a continuation of November as well, when even Italy beat South Africa. Okay, that maybe tells us more about South Africa than does about Italy. But, you know, England have carried on in their winning run. They just know how to win now. That Welsh game in the Millennium Stadium highlighted that. When you know how to win, you know how to win. They stuck with it. They came into this tournament ranked second in the world.
So the teams are just better as opposed to the game?
Well, never in the tournament's history have three of the contenders gone in ranked in the top five in the world. You know, it was a very good November and one of the best in a long while. And this has carried on into the Six Nations. Maybe it's something to do with the Lions Tour as well. Players want to put their names forward. I just do think that the Northern Hemisphere teams are on an upward curve at the moment, and it's been maintained into the Six Nations. And I think also you have to say that France and Scotland have had a bit of a resurgence. And like for 4 or 5 years, we had a dominant England, Wales, Ireland triumphant. I think they'd won the last 6 titles, occupied the top 3 places for 4 of the last 5 years. It had become a 2-tier tournament. Now it's a two-tier tournament, except that it's only Italy in the lower tier. And the other five, whenever they've met so far, they've been 4 one-score games.
Okay, so we're reaping the benefits, Keith, of the teams being better and more equal.
Better and more equal. I think even the shock of the shake-up of the Heineken Cup has had almost a reassertment among the provinces, both here and in Scotland. I think they seem to be playing at a higher standard, a different style. You look at the manner in which the teams are playing, there's layer upon layer in the back line, a mixture of forwards and backs, there's different runners, so you have more options for everybody. Everybody has kind of moved up. They're not identical ways of playing, but there are commonalities between all of them. I think the standard's been excellent. I wouldn't say that it would absolutely terrify anybody in the Southern Hemisphere. Well, actually, maybe it would, apart from New Zealand, because the other teams are struggling a little at the moment. What I would say was, sitting down watching the first 10 minutes of Wales-England, I was just saying, this is why we don't want to change the Six Nations too much. This is why we don't want to concertina it into 5 weeks. You know,
it would be cruel, Keith, wouldn't it, to ask those players to come out a week later?
It really would, but there's an intensity there. It's quite hard to put your finger on why it is, and it's often labelled as being one of the negatives. But like for me now, I had the weekend off. I didn't go to any game. I sat down and I said, right, I'm going to throw myself in to the Six Nations as a fan. And I sat down and I said, yes, this is what I remember, or what I believe I remembered back in the sort of my youth, where you're looking up to see something that is just different and almost primal. I mean, the first 10 minutes of that game was phenomenal. And even what I loved about Wales-England, and I know there's an awful lot of criticism has gone for Jonathan Davis, the kick, and the sort of loose kick. But the two passes that were made by Ford to Farrell and by Farrell to Elliot Daly were of the highest possible standard. There just was not one step had to be taken. There was no adjustment of the hands. There was no adjustment of the run. And Cuthbert's come in for an awful lot of grief, and I think deserves a fair amount of it. But it still required perfection in those two passes for that try to be scored. So at the end of sort of 78, 79 minutes of one of the most intense test games we've seen for a while, that skill was still evident. I mean, it's a brilliant shop window.
England are the best team in the tournament.
Well, at the moment, certainly to survive some of the battering they took inside their own 22, notably was it at 13-11, or when Wales were looking to go more than 7 points clear, potentially 7 points clear with the conversion to come, battering away their line. James Haskell gives away a penalty. Wales have to settle for 3. You sense at that moment, Wales haven't put them away here. They had them on the ropes. One more punch, and it's as close as England have come to losing. But they've been in that situation a few times against Australia as well. And they're just very good, a very resilient team at the moment. No matter what players are on the pitch at the time, they have a belief in what they can do. And they get back to the score, and you think, yeah, 2 minutes ago, a loose kick by Jonathan Davis, poor defending by Alex Cuthbert. But Keith's right, you will not see a better 3-man counter-attack from the halfway line than that for another decade in this tournament. It was just to have the belief as well as the skills and the precision. Like, people talk about bravery on a rugby pitch, and there's an awful lot of bravery, and not least in that match and what Ross Moriarty was doing around the pitch to any Englishman he could line up. But that's a form of bravery as well, to come up with 2 passes like that and to come up conjure a try like that. It was remarkable. At the moment, it's going to take a mighty fine team to beat them and finish above them. But hey, that's been the way for the last 4 or 5 years. You finish above England, you win the title.
Yeah. What are our chances of actually winning the tournament here, Keith? Like, it seems as if what we need is... looks like Arsenal just won a penalty for a high boot from Lewandowski, a kick against Koscielny, and the referee has given the penalty. So we'll see what the story is. Bayern 1, Arsenal 0, 29 minutes on the clock. We've still got a minute or so before Alexis Sanchez takes it. No, we don't, actually. Looks like he's now ready. So I'll talk through this before I get Keith Wood's answer to what are our chances of legitimately winning this tournament. It is Neuer in goals, and Alexis Sanchez eventually is going to take this penalty. Referee says, yeah, go for it. Here we go. Alexis Sanchez saved. Rebound screwed. Goal! Oh, he hooks the rebound in despite the fact there's four Bayern Munich defenders around him. And Jerry's happy. Happy, happy, happy. One all. 29 minutes on the clock. Alexis Sanchez equalised. We don't want to finish second here. There's no real point in finishing second in the tournament. So does that mean now we become a little bit ballsy and we're not really trying to win the games from here on? We're trying to get bonus points? Like, when does this enter your thinking, Keith?
Well, I think we've two bonus points already. I think we have a little bit of scope we need to win the games first. But I would hope that we have the capacity to go and win all the rest of the games. And that would be the target, obviously, so that we know exactly what we need to do on the last weekend. Whether we go after them immediately, I think it depends. Depends on which Ireland turn up, because I think Ireland has got such a kick in the shins for the lame performance on the first weekend that I don't think we'll see that again in this tournament. And the wish is that level of focus is kept up at that point as it needs to be. And it depends on who comes back in as to what we can actually go after. And it was very easy to go after bonus points in Rome because we were given... It was actually in stark contrast to how Italy played the previous week. They had no line speed whatsoever. And the previous week, we were coming against Scotland, who were all over us every time the ball hit our hands. We had all the time in the world to do whatever we wanted to do in Italy. So that won't happen again. But whether we go after it at this stage, I don't know. It's a hard call. It's still early.
You can't go after bonus points in round three of the Six Nations. But, and I hate having this conversation, this is why I think actually I am against them, and I even agree with Stephen Jones of all people on this, that if it comes to pass, like, England are nailed on to get a bonus point against Italy. Have a look about it. Like, Wales are going to be the only ones.
Scotland.
If they do that, they go to 18 points. And that means if Ireland win their next two games, which is a hell of an achievement to beat France at home and Wales away without bonus points, they'd go into the last weekend on 14 with England on 18.
Yeah.
Depending on the points difference, what England might do to Italy in the meantime, it could be that Ireland would have to win not only by more than seven, but more than that again, or score four tries themselves, which just seems like a preposterous ending to the Six Nations.
So
you would hope it wouldn't come to that.
So try and get involved in a slugfest with France and beat them 37-30, and so we scored four tries.
You can't go into a game like that.
We've got no choice. We've got to try and think about some way of Machiavellianly.
Certainly, if you're two tries up with 30 minutes to go, 20 minutes to go, you go to the corner.
Does it in any way, though, alter your thinking in terms of your game plan? So, you know, previously you would have been happy with a 9-6 win in these games because ultimately they are arm wrestles and everybody understands that. But if the game is going to be a bit looser, if you are going to take more risks, that you do have to accept that your own defence will be a little bit more porous because players will just get tired.
I think it depends on the players you have in the field. And I don't know that that's what the Six Nations is about. And, you know, I'm against the bonus points as well. I think it's unfair to put bonus points on a situation that isn't home and away. I just think it makes it seems to be totally out of kilter. And I think the Six Nations bowed to the pressure and they've already said that they're thinking of bowing back again. You know, so could this be one flash in the pan where that doesn't happen? I mean, it's frustrating. For me, I just find it a bit frustrating.
And I agree with all that, right?
But so we have it. We're dealing with it.
Yeah.
So we have to deal with it, right? Okay, I accept.
Does it change your thinking if you're because you want to win it, right? There's literally no point in finishing second again.
No, but to try and get a bonus point is still, and I go back to the miracle match of all those years ago, that Munster against Gloucester. And the conversation was, try and get a try every 20 minutes. So it isn't about throwing caution to the wind and just going after that immediately from the start. It's about still going through the game to win the game and to build it up. Because you're basically saying that you are looking into the future and seeing what England are doing, and they're going to get bonus points all over the place. So, but what if they don't? And what if we lose a game because we're going after a fourth bonus point, and actually if we'd won that game we may have won it at the end. I mean, you have to win the game first. Now you can go about it trying to win it, playing whether it's more expansive or not, but I don't know that that's necessarily the way that we're playing. Build up the scores, score the scores, try and get a couple early on, but go for them. But don't know that you set it out entirely to do that. Maybe you have to, I'm not sure.
Memory serves, the miracle match was not under the bonus point system. It just so happened that in the head-to-head, Munster had to score four tries and win by 27 points or win scoring five tries. I think that was the maths of memory serves. And going back a bit now, and not every Munster player on the pitch even knew what the mathematics were, because very few people really countenanced the fact that they were actually going to produce a miracle.
Yeah.
It was about saving face and winning the match. That's the mentality they brought into the game. And even at the end, they weren't 100% sure that they needed the conversion from Ronan O'Gara to actually seal the deal. So Munster, typical of those days when they're in their pomp, even when they got it wrong, they got it right. If memory serves, they also went to Twickenham to play Harlequins in a game when it was perceived as being very important that they got the bonus point. They started going to the corner from early on in the game, and they ended up in a bit of a dogfight and just squeezing home and never coming within an ass's roar of a bonus point. It's just such a dangerous mentality, and particularly to go into a home game against France or an away game against Wales. Like Keith said, you build a score and take it from there, but you don't go into the attitude we're chasing four tries from the off.
Okay, what about the changes at this point? Rob Kearney's going to be out. Is Zeebo automatically to fullback, or do we have a potential for Zeebo to stay in the wing and Tiernan O'Halloran?
I wouldn't have thought so, given that Tiernan O'Halloran hasn't even been chosen on the bench ahead of Craig Gilroy or Tommy Bowe thus far. I would have thought Simon Zeebo actually has played more at fullback even than Rob Kearney did. So he's been the automatic reserve choice at 15 heretofore. And if you analyse Joe Schmidt's selection policies, they've generally been fairly consistent, and that Simon Zeebo is the second choice fullback. And it also means that you can go back to recalling Andrew Trimble in the wing, who has been more or less a first choice winger as well. So you have a back three of Zeebo, Trimble and Earls, which when Rob Kearney isn't there is probably your first choice back three.
Yeah, it's straightforward enough, Keith.
Yeah, I think that's a straight call. Zeebo is comfortable at 15. I feel at times that's his more natural position. If he gets involved a lot at 15, I mean, if he drifts out of the game at 15, we kind of lose out on a lot. But if you can bring him into the game as a first receiver from time to time, or as a second receiver from time to time, he has a good array of passing, which we saw last week. He does have, there is a touch of magic about him. I said that always. And you just need him to be fully focused. I thought his focus at the weekend was just fantastic. I thought in many ways he set some of the standard from one of the kicks that went up, that he was immediately under it. He got stuck into, I think, five or six times in the first 5 minutes, which we don't normally see from him. And I love to see wingers and fullback get involved in the game a little bit more anyway.
Yeah.
So I think he brings a lot to us. I do think Rob Kearney has got some pretty unfair grief over the last few weeks. He tends to come in for an awful lot anyway, and we're critical of him at times. But the last couple of weeks, I think he's delivered very well for Ireland. And it's a pity that we have another injury in the back line.
Yeah, it is, because you kind of felt like Kearney was getting back to a point after the game in November against the All Blacks. That was one of his greatest ever performances for Ireland. So you felt like he was hitting some level of peak again.
Yeah, he's been a bit like Johnny Sexton this season, that, you know, injuries have continued to bedevil him, but when he's been fit and on the pitch, he's looked as sharp as ever.
Sexton straight back in?
Oh, unquestionably, yeah. Unquestionably. I mean, Paddy Jackson's been sensationally good and he started 7 of Ireland's last 9 matches. I think he's landed 27 of his last 28 kicks at goal at test match level, which is going back to South Africa in the summer, which is a remarkable record, and that spreads confidence through a team when you've got a goal kicker landing from everywhere in the pitch. But Johnny Sexton,
when he squirts them over, yeah, the second conversion,
lame duck,
kick.
But you know, still 9 out of 9, it's a phenomenal performance. But Johnny Sexton has proven many times that he can come in from a relative period of idleness or on the sidelines and reach match fitness. I don't think he'll be playing for Leinster this weekend. He'll be in Monaghan the three-day training camp. He's pretty much Joe Schmidt's first name in the team sheet when he's fitting well, and with plenty of good reasons. He's got a wealth of experience still that Paddy Jackson is in the process of accumulating. He takes the ball to the line a little bit flatter, and his decision making is fantastic.
Yeah.
I think Johnny Sexton is nailed on to start if he's fit.
Greg Ledlow is out for the rest of the Six Nations as well, Keith, and this is one of the reasons
I'd
be fairly confident that England will get a bonus point in their home game against Scotland. Scotland are vastly improved from the team and the identity of what they were over the last couple of seasons, but they need everybody fully fit and firing on all cylinders if they're actually going to be competitive, particularly in games like that.
Well, they do. I actually felt Finn Russell kind of lost his way a little bit for about 10 minutes once Laidlaw went off. It was quite interesting to watch. He seemed to be forcing things. The calming hand of the guy on his inside wasn't there. He just seemed a little bit out of kilter, but I don't know. I think if Scotland turn up in Twickenham and play with the intensity that they did against Ireland, they will make it very, very hard for a team to score four tries against. And it's whether they can sustain that level of aggression that they've had over the last two weekends, because they were a pleasure to watch again in Paris. You know, so if they're able to bring that, and if their players have enough of self-belief in themselves, I think they can be very, very tough. I mean, Scotland isn't that they're a pushover. They're not a pushover. But they dropped their heads in the last number of seasons. And last year, they were very poor for a lot of the Six Nations. And yet had shown an awful lot of really good things, but just couldn't hold it together and kind of suffered in the last 10 or 15 minutes. And again in the autumn. So they've got one win. They were a very close second at the weekend. I think you'd be getting decent odds for four tries against Scotland at the present moment in time. And I mean, they're smashing people at the moment. They'll have a bit of a rest of 2 weeks. They're battle hardened. I know England are, but England still have a fair few injuries, and it'll be interesting to see what players that they bring back.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think Scotland have. I think they still have another big game in them. I wouldn't be so certain.
We all hope you're right about that. John O'Gibbs and the decision to make him head coach at Ulster, they've added Dwayne Peel to the coaching ticket today. This is a real sign that Ulster are beefing things up a bit. How Les Kiss was saying that he picked them, or certainly he identified them, and the professional game board ratified that. So that would suggest that it's all his doing.
And I'm sure David Nusafour had a hand in it as well. This is very much consistent with the RFU's policy of having good, experienced, high-quality coaching at all the provinces as well as the national team, and producing four largely Indigenous home-based squads to give the Irish team plenty to select from, and not picking overseas players. And it's a policy that's making them very competitive in the Pro 12 and fairly competitive again in Europe, and it's a policy that's working, and by investing in high-quality coaching. And that's, I think, very much consistent with this approach. And
I kind of had a vague sense that Les Kiss was going to be the head coach.
He's the director of rugby and John O'Gibbs is the head coach.
Yeah.
Like, we're talking semantics and titles here, aren't we? It's a bit like Stuart Lancaster, head coach at Leinster, with Leo Collins still director of rugby. You know, I still think Les Kiss is the boss, but I tell you what, they've really upped their game by bringing in John O'Gibbs. I mean, he's learned to the altar of Joe Schmidt with Leinster. He's had a couple of years in Claremont. He's been on that coaching treadmill for a while now. He understands clearly that it's a marathon, not a sprint. He's not an overreach, but you'd imagine he's an even better coach now,
yeah,
after his 2 years with Claremont than he was when he first became assistant coach with Leinster. So Ulster have got themselves a very good head coach, stroke forwards coach, whatever you want to call him.
Was there some sense that perhaps he was in line for the Connacht job, that Connacht wanted him, that he was in the running for that?
I'm reliably informed, no.
Okay. When will we get a Connacht job? I didn't realise Ulster were looking for a head coach. It's kind of quite clear that Connacht needs something. And here Ulster have like, oh, we've actually gone out and got one there, lads.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you do it.
Connacht are working away, I'm told. And I would expect an appointment there in the next week or two.
All right. Great stuff. We leave it there. Keith Wood, thanks very much for joining us. Jerry Thorney of the Irish Times, thanks very much for joining us. 1-1 in both games tonight, ticking into the last 5 minutes of the first half. Real 1, Napoli 1, Bayern 1, Arsenal 1.
Get closer to Irish rugby with News Talk and Vodafone, official sponsor of the Irish rugby team.